Hello, everyone, and welcome to the End Credits Radio Show here on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio. I am your host, Adam A. Donaldson, and joining me today is...
Peter Salmon. What's up, y'all?
Is that because you're wearing flannel?
You have to
get the y'all out.
Griffin flannel?
Griffin flannel.
Represent.
So many confusing mishmash of things going on here. Let's move on.
Yeah.
End Credits is a local movie show for local movie fans. We are here every Wednesday at 2 p.m. to talk the latest in pop culture and review the newest movies, which this week will be the new music drama remake, A Star Is Born. That is in the back half of the show. For the first half, we're going to talk about some of the recent news items from the past week, including two big new trailers. We'll look at the sneak peeks of likely award nominees Vice and The Mule. And then we will ask Peter to tell us about his top five scary movies. We'll assume he'd made his list independent of what Vince did last week, but you never know.
Yeah, well, hopefully. we'll find out.
We'll find out. But the first thing we're going to talk about is Star Wars news. And for once, it's Star Wars news not related to people hating on Star Wars, which is kind of refreshing. It's like just straight up Star Wars news about this new TV show. It is called The Mandalorian, and it is from Jon Favreau, you may know from the Iron Man movies and...
Swingers.
I was thinking of stuff he's directed, like Elf. He's done Cowboys and Aliens. Chef. His last one was The Jungle Book, I believe. But he's working on a Star Wars TV show for the Disney streaming service, which is going to start next year. And it's called The Mandalorian, and it is about somebody who wears some very familiar-looking bounty hunter armor on the outskirts of the galaxy. It's supposed to take place after Return of the Jedi, so between Return of the Jedi and The Force Awakens. That's sort of all that's been released. There was also a picture released of what the main character looks like in the Mandalorian armor. It looks very cowboyish. It looks very like Unforgiven, but with like a helmet headed person.
Yeah, it looks interesting.
Does it look interesting?
Yeah, I think it looks really interesting. Is it gonna be live action or animated?
No, it's live action.
Live action. Okay, well, that's special and that's new.
Yeah,
there's all the Clone Wars animated, but I think something live action will be quite new enough that I am excited for it. Fresh enough.
Mm-hmm.
And is it going to be on the Disney streaming?
It's Disney streaming.
See, now that the Mandalorian, cool. But the Disney streaming, that is what I'm excited for.
Really? You're excited?
Well, I don't know what it'll be like. It'll be exciting. Canada better get it right away because we don't even have Hulu yet.
No.
And I am
We just got Prime this year, Amazon Prime Video.
Do we have it now? Okay, yeah. That's good.
But before that, it was Crave TV and Netflix and then Show Me for a while. And then Show Me Full. Yeah, I mean, That's a whole other bill. Like, is you know the.
I think we'll get it like when it first comes out.
I think they have to.
Yeah,
because I think part of this, it's going to be like all Disney stuff, right? So, I mean, I guess 20th Century Fox stuff when that deal is all buttoned up. But I think that's part of the business strategy is to go as wide as possible,
mm-hmm.
Because the Disney Netflix deal also applies to Netflix in Canada, which is kind of interesting. That usually it's tough, you know, going cross border.
Yeah,
like that.
In the States, do they get Disney on their Netflix?
Yeah,
they do. Okay, they do now.
Disney's an Netflix exclusive. But yeah,
might get rid of them though, right? Once
they'll definitely pull all the Disney stuff off Netflix, which is you know problematic. But again, that's like a whole separate issue because I've been wondering this week about the Mandalorian and whether or not you know. Solo, a Star Wars story, just came out on Blu-ray, and a lot of people are crediting that the film not doing as well is because of Star Wars sort of overload.
Mm-hmm.
That
two in 1 year was too much,
right? And you said it. This is a live action thing, which is neat because there's always been Star Wars,
mm-hmm.
Star Wars animated series. Whether you go back to the 80s with like droids and the Ewoks, or Clone Wars or Rebels.
Mm-hmm.
There hasn't been too much on TV in terms of live action Star Wars. The only two things are the Ewok TV movies in the 80s.
Yeah, back in the 80s, yeah.
The Battle for Endor, and I can't remember what the other one was called.
Yeah, fantastic animated ones. But yeah, I think live action's needed. Look at a wider audience.
Well, that's the thing, too, is that if the live action portion of it, will that add to the I guess, the oversaturation of Star Wars on the market.
I think it would have if it came out this year, or especially if it came out 2017. It's probably not going to come out, I think it says, what, 2019?
Which is the probably, same year the next movie
comes
out.
Yeah, and it's Disney, so probably like winter 2019.
Yeah.
So. Yeah, you're right, though. It just depends on how the film does, I think, next year for when it comes out. Mm. If that film's really good and this is also really good, I think that'll be fine. Mm-hmm. If it's another kind of Han Solo disappointment, then yeah, this might still be great, but might not get enough views.
Well, and that's something else I worry about, too, because spoiler for Solo, A Star Wars Story, but there's the scene in it where Darth Maul appears.
Yeah.
Which is a little in the silly. Hologram, which there's Darth Maul, for people who don't know, has like a rich history after Obi-Wan cuts him in half and shoves him down a bottomless hole.
Does he in the comics?
And not in the comics, but in the Clone Wars animated series. And in the Rebels animated series, he comes back in Rebels too. So when for fans, they know that when they go with Darth Maul, it's like, oh no, it's Darth Maul. But I think for the vast majority of people who are seeing Solo in the movie theaters and Darth Maul appears and everyone's like, what the?
Yeah.
Didn't
I think they were expecting everyone to be super excited, but
didn't
it was kind of...
cut that mofo in half?
Yeah.
It's just bizarre, and I wonder if that might happen with The Mandalorian, because there's been a lot of Mandalorian sort of world building on the Clone Wars animated series. And in fact, Jon Favreau did the voice of the leader of the Mandalorians in the Clone Wars animated series.
So that's good. So he's very aware of the universe. So he's right. Not going to disappoint anyone.
Well, again,
any of the huge Star Wars fans.
Right. And but that's the thing, is like, if you're bringing in something that's going to appeal to that select like Star Wars fandom, if it's not going to reach further.
Mm-hmm.
One thing I will say is that they have like an interesting slate of directors lined up, like
Taika Waititi.
Taika Waititi,
yeah.
Bryce Dallas Howard,
yeah.
Who's going to direct one, and Rick Famuyama, who did Dope, which is a movie I like
Dope,
a lot.
Dope, yeah.
Dope is very, very funny, very fun. So it's an interesting slate that they've put together in terms of directors. Like I might
they got a lot of hope for it.
They have a lot of hope.
Yeah.
But I also remember, too, that before they sold Star Wars to Disney, they were developing a Star Wars TV show for years, which was going to be about like the criminal underworld of
that
the Star Wars.
Very cool.
Yeah, and they wrote something like 60 scripts for it, and then it never never got made.
We might see it on the Disney streaming. It wouldn't surprise me if they got the rights to it.
It would be a shame if they like developed it that far and then it never came. But you never know. Who knows? I mean, it's. I think it's just I have an asterisk next to this, because just if this last year proves ever anything, it's like there's too much.
There's too much.
A thing as too much Star Wars in one go.
Mm-hmm.
So it's, you know, maybe something for Disney to think about. Not that they listen to us, of course.
Yeah, well, Marvel's doing the same thing. Although Disney owns Marvel, so yeah,
Marvel
Disney.
Also owns. But you know,
Disney's
Marvel
doing too much.
But Marvel, like you can have a Thor movie, a Black Panther movie, an Avengers movie.
And they're
sort of all differently flavored.
Yeah.
So you can have, you know, but how different is one Star Wars movie from another? Mm-hmm. Is the question. Anyway, speaking of different movies, two big trailers were released this week. One is for the Adam McKay, Dick Cheney biopic called Vice, and the other is Clint Eastwood's new film, his second in a year, which is impressive considering he's almost 80 years old, The Mule. I do want to talk about Vice first, because I guess that's... I want to. Anyway, it's Christian Bale as Dick Cheney. And you barely recognize him in the trailer.
I didn't recognize him at all. I had to Wikipedia that up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He disappears in the part. I wonder.
And not fake makeup at all either. It's quite well done, I think.
What do you mean fake makeup?
Well, like, I mean, well, is he wearing?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it doesn't look fake.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. It looks pretty, like, I think he might have put on some weight.
Yeah.
It'll be interesting, because Dick Cheney is an interesting figure, no matter how you might feel about him.
Yeah. He wasn't dumb. He did some bad things, but he's one of those interesting Republicans.
Yeah. I mean, he was a part of the Nixon administration. He was part of the Reagan administration. Yeah. He was vice president.
Kind of behind them the whole time.
Yeah. And the thing I'm interested in is seeing Steve Carell as Donald Rumsfeld.
Yeah. Steve Carell's been doing so many dramedies, and he's like, he's perfect for that.
Yeah, I'm very interested to see what that is going to look like, because you don't see much of him in the trailer.
No, you don't.
But, and the other part of it, the other actress, our actor I'm interested in is Amy Adams as Lynn Cheney, because Lynn Cheney in real life is completely unlikable, seems like a completely unlikable person, whereas Amy Adams is immensely likable.
Yeah.
So can Amy Adams pull that level
or just
of evil off?
Balance it out? Where you're just kind of neutral about her?
Yeah.
No, I hope we hate her in the film. I think well, who's directing it? Is it going to be?
It's Adam McKay.
Oh, okay.
So Big Short, Succession. So, I mean, he's done.
He's done, Democratic, so it's not going to be.
Well, he's also done good work in making unlikable people sort of likable.
Yeah. Well, like The Big Short, right?
Right.
Also with Christian Bale.
Also and Steve Carell.
Yeah, you're right. They're
so
regulars.
It's, but yeah, it seems to be something he's guess developing his a niche for himself is, you know, mm-hmm. adapting material where you have, you know, where you should like dislike the people at the center of it.
Yeah.
But you kind of like them, and I also wonder how this will stand up to W, which was the Oliver Stone biopic about George W. Bush.
Oh, I'm not sure. Was Josh Brolin?
Yeah.
Because
I like it a lot. I know some people don't like it, but I like that movie a lot.
Oh, yeah. I thought it was great. I think it'll be very different in the sense that George Bush and Dick Cheney, even though he was the vice president, they're so different. Mm. Like, George Bush, I have nothing against it, but, you know, he's not a genius. He's more just like a funny, goofy guy. People make fun of him.
Yeah.
Dick Cheney, even though, in my opinion, he can be a little evil. He is a genius, and he is the one who was behind everything George Bush did, everything some of the previous Republicans did.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think it'll be really interesting because of that.
Yeah. The thing that makes me wonder is because Sam Rockwell is playing W, and it just
he seems to be the interviewer in it.
Yeah, it's just I don't think. I mean, it's a trailer, so
yeah.
I didn't really buy his performance.
Anyone would view it in the same way as they viewed W, and this seems more like a dramedy where W is just a straight up.
Yeah, which is more a classic biopic. It is strange that Adam McKay, speaking of like bringing unlikable people to the screen, because Oliver Stone did that a lot because...
You better not be about to mention good old Tyler Perry. Is that who you're about to mention?
No. Okay. I was saying like when W came out, it was at the end of George W. Bush's presidency when he was like thoroughly enlightened. And Dick Cheney, Oliver Stone also put out Nixon, which was about like...
Frost Nixon, right?
No, it's just called Nixon.
Oh, okay. Well, I hadn't even heard of that.
Yeah, so this was like 95, 96. Oh, okay. So talk about like unlikable politicians, like to make a movie where that's like openly sympathetic to Richard Milhouse Nixon was quite an accomplishment. So
I'm curious also just because of all the Trump things that are going on. I'm sorry that I had to bring up Trump, but because of all the Trump things that are going on, I'm curious if anyone will be, I don't know, I guess upset that Cheney's getting, to be the main character in a biopic.
Yeah. Yeah, that's interesting too, that, you know, Dick Cheney sort of reaches back to... Not a chaotic evil politician, but a very
No, he wasn't evil. I meant to bore like he's kind of like a evil's not the right word, but he's like kind of, I don't want to say villain either, but he's
Machiavelli.
Yeah, he's like Machiavelli. That right there is perfect. He's evil, but he put it to good use with regards to what Republicans want.
Fair enough. Speaking of Machiavelli, we have Clint Eastwood starring and directing.
Also, you said it was his second film this year? What else did he direct?
He did I can't remember the time, but it was like the movie about the train attack.
Right, okay.
The 310 to Paris. It's 310 to Yuma, but I can't remember what the time was. It's, you know, but it was to Paris. It was the guy who was armed with the knife on the train, and he had the guys who were their heroes in real life play themselves on screen.
Okay, and that was 2018?
That was back in February, I think.
Okay.
But yeah, but this one he also stars in.
Yeah.
As a
I love when he does that.
You know what's interesting is the first scene where you sort of see him and he opens the trunk and it's the camera's looking at him and you can sort of see how like bony his arms are. Yeah. Like he's kind of showing his age a bit.
Yeah. But he seems to be embracing it. He's letting his characters kind of go along with his age.
Yeah.
And to how not erratic, but how kind of stern he is.
Yeah. He's interesting in this. He's playing an older fella, obviously, who's having to be a drug mule for some reason. Mm-hmm. It's never explained in the trailer, but he's like, he's disenfranchised from his own family. That's not explained in the trailer, but it's sort of intriguing. He's playing with a drug mule, like I said, but
Leo Sharp.
Yeah,
apparently it's based on something real.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Oh, really? A World War II veteran named Leo Sharp, and yeah. Became a mule for the cartel.
Okay. Yeah, and then there's FBI agents on his tail. The mm-hmm. FBI just played by Bradley Cooper, speaking of, you know.
He wasn't in the commercial much, but Well, Bradley Cooper's in this, and it's directed by the main star, so this is very relevant to A Star is Born. Bradley Cooper's on a roll, but I think he'd be great for this part.
Yeah, he's, it'll be interesting to see. My favorite headline about this was, I can't remember where it's from, but it said, Clint Eastwood is smuggling drugs and Bradley Cooper's not having it. it'll be interesting. There's a great tension in the trailer, but the trailer also opens with this, like, sort of long scene of the Clint Eastwood character just checking on the drugs in the back of his truck, and then a highway patrolman comes up and they're making small talk. Clint Eastwood's a really interesting director. I've found, like, even
I think he's pretty good at it.
Yeah, he's like, even I like Sully a lot. I know a lot of people didn't like Sully, but I like Sully a lot.
It wasn't my favorite Clint Eastwood film, but no. I still thought it was great. Honestly, American Sniper. I'm not like a huge military guy, and patriotism's getting a bit too far in the States. But even that was very enjoyable. It was just very well done. Oh, and Bradley Cooper.
Bradley Cooper.
He is over the place.
All right. Well, speaking of all over the place, it is time for Peter to reveal.
What's your favorite scary movie?
I didn't have that clip in time for Vince's picks last week, but I found it for this week. So why don't we start at your number five?
Number five? My number five would be, and I hope it counts as a horror, Misery.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, by good old Rob Reiner. I'm just picking it because Kathy Bates, man. Kathy Bates. She's in Stranger Things right now. She's in all those American Horror Stories. But she's not scarier in anything but Misery. Like,
yeah.
I've never... There's not much gore in it. There's not really much pop-ups. And it's just, like, a singular villain. She's not an alien or anything. She is just so darn creepy.
Yeah.
And it just shows how great of an actor she is. This was the whole thing. And it's, again, one of those Stephen King films that's, no offense to Stephen King, better than his novella. It's, like, I think on par with Shawshank Redemption.
It's better than most Stephen King films. It's one of the better Stephen King-based films, for sure. But, it's because of her, totally.
Oh, 100%. And the main guy, James Caan.
Yeah,
yeah, he's okay too, but Kathy Bates, 100%.
It's the Kathy Bates show, absolutely.
Yeah,
and she won an Oscar for it.
Did she? Okay,
that's where her Oscar's from. Is from Misery.
Just one Oscar?
I think so. I think she's been nominated for others, but
yeah, she might get an Emmy now.
For what? For American Horror Story?
I would say probably more likely Stranger Things.
Okay,
it's got nominated for. You don't think she would ever win through Stranger Things?
I think Stranger Things gets nominated a lot. I don't think it wins anything.
Yeah.
But that's neither here nor there. Misery. Okay, that's a great choice. Yeah. Okay, number four.
All right, number four. Hostel. It's been a while since I saw Hostel, but I really enjoyed that when I first saw it. Eli Roth. All his films are just great, especially in Inglourious Basterds. I know he didn't direct it, but his character is just so scary, and you can tell he wrote it because Hostel, just all around, I wouldn't say it's immensely scary, but it is just so gory that even if you've watched real gore online, I don't know, you're still gonna get a little grossed out. And the ending as well is just so dark and sad. It's just a real mixture of gore and sad things like suicide. And I remember when I first watched it, it was just a year before I went. I did one of those, you know, hippie-ish gap year things. And it was right after watching Hostel. So I was a little freaked out the whole time. But that, me being freaked out the whole time, made me realize how well done Hostel was when it comes to fear. And I haven't seen the sequel, but I'm assuming it's probably just 10 times even gorier.
Yeah, maybe in one or two places. The thing about Hostel, it's like, because the two kind of the main characters are kind of like these ugly American stereotypes, and very bad things happen to them. The thing about Hostel, though, I find them sort of like deeply cynical. I mean, not that horror movies aren't in generally kind of cynical sometimes, but it just, like, because there's no redeeming quality to the villains. There's not much of a redeeming quality in the heroes either.
No, I'm not saying it's a good film. It's just, if I want to get scared or at least grossed out, I think it's a good choice. I think it's a really good, if you're having one of those Halloween parties where you guys just put on some films, I think Hostel would be pretty good.
Fair enough. Fair enough.
Yeah. It's number 4. I did put it number 1.
All right. Don't get so defensive. All right, number 3 then.
The Fly.
Oh, yeah, yeah,
by
yeah.
David Cronenberg, Canadian hero. yeah, it's just Jeff Goldblum, man. Mm-hmm. I would say I love Jeff Goldblum as a funny guy, but this is one of his best roles.
Mm-hmm.
He is just, you get so in-depth into his character, and you can almost at the beginning, you can relate to this crazy scientist. Up until the point that he goes a bit too far.
Mm-hmm.
And then when he gets... Well, I don't think it's spoilers the name of it. When he becomes a fly, it's when you realize how amazing David Cronenberg has always been with makeup, just costume design in general. I know I forget the person's name, but I know he always has the same person each film.
Right.
And, yeah, even more so than Downsizing. It just really shows how he's great at editing and just... I have nothing against CGI, but I'm glad that there is still people like David Cronenberg that use makeup and make it just 100% real.
Mm.
Like we were talking about with the upcoming Chaney film.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and like I said, just Jeff Goldblum as a fly. It's not immensely scary, but it's like Hostel, it grosses you out. But it's just a great film all around. It's just phenomenal acting.
Yeah, and it was before like... Jeff Goldblum had kind of like cemented his like Goldbluminess.
Yeah, exactly.
So there's kind of a character there.
It's fun to see an early glimpse of who we all would come to know and love.
Yeah, that's sort of like, I don't want to say it's Pete Cronenberg, but I think like from where he was sort of leading up to through the 80s, like Scanners and mm-hmm. Dead Ringers, like all the body horror stuff, that's sort of like when that was mm-hmm. like the peak. Sort of like, I don't think he's been as Hollywood since.
No, The Fly was probably, like you said, it was his peak.
Yeah.
No offense to him. I love him, but yeah.
No, he's done great stuff since, of course, but.
That's his most well-known.
It's his most well-known, probably his most successful one, too.
Yeah.
It's
just a mixture of the two positives.
Right. It just, you know, like the whole decade of him as a filmmaker sort of led to that, mm-hmm. and it sort of delivers, and it's a Hollywood movie for sure. It's a remake,
mm-hmm.
But it's still clearly of a type. It's still of the Cronenberg mold, mm-hmm. and it's a Cronenberg movie through and through.
Oh, yeah. And most of it's just set in the apartment, and you know, makeup and all of that aside, he's just amazing at setting up the scenes to put your mind in the proper place.
It's an interesting because, you know, you think of The Fly, which was a remake of a
the 50s
B movie. Then you also have The Thing a couple of years before that, which was also a sort of hardcore remake of another 50s movie.
But also a lot better.
So I guess the lesson is remakes aren't all bad.
Yeah, no. No, I think another one that I was thinking about picking was I think it was like 2005 remake of Halloween.
Oh, yeah.
I thought it was quite good.
Rob
Zombie?
Yeah. Sad Michael Myers trick-or-treating to Rush is not the best scene, but that's fine.
Other than that, the stick scene. The stick scene is amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Number 2,
The Blair Witch Project.
Oh.
I love it. I don't know why. I think maybe just because I got a camera when I was really young. I just love little handy cam films. I love it so much. And this is the handiest, cammiest film of all time. Yeah, well, and the actors are great. When I first watched it, I was quite young. I thought it was just like a college film or something like that. And it did only have a budget of $60,000, but made $248.6 million. So that's quite impressive. Good for you, Blair Witch Project. But it is a lot like Misery in the sense. I would say no. You know what? The Blair Witch Project is not like Misery. It is quite scary. It is quite scary. But I think like Misery, there's one very well known scary part in Misery, and I think it's the same with the Blair Witch Project. There's just one part in particular that is immensely scary, but the whole film is such a marvelous build up to the ending. I don't think the ending would be as scary as it is without how real getting lost in a forest and, you know, the handy cam display of that is. And I also think what's very scary is the little things just hanging in the trees. Yeah. I don't know why, but I've had nightmares of those. And I remember the one time after rewatching it, I went, if you live in the East End of Guelph in the Watson Park, the one time after watching Blair Witch Project on Halloween, I went into the forest and there was little hanging twiggy things like from the film, and it freaked me out, man. It freaked me out. So don't go walking in there at night, anybody listening. But yeah, the Blair Witch Project, that shows how it's still in my mind. I can see, I haven't watched since I was young, so I can see maybe if it's a little dated, but
I think it's fine. I think it holds up. Yeah. I remember seeing it in theaters in 99 and, you know, riding my bike home from the theater at night and, you know, being a little wigged out. Yeah. But even like I watched it a couple of years ago because I had a chance to interview one of the directors and one of the actors in it.
That's awesome.
Thank you.
Well, no, that is.
But I think it still holds up. Like I put it on at the video store at Thomas Video while I was working there.
Yeah, good.
And it was like Sunday night, so there was like nobody around. So I'm walking home on 10 p.m. Yeah. after I closed the store, and still a little wigged out. And I want to you mentioned the actors. One of the actors, Joshua Leonard, was in Unsane. Soderbergh's Unsane. He was the stalker. In Unsane.
That's good that some of them have continued on.
So yeah, he's doing okay, that Joshua Leonard. Yeah. That brings us to number one.
Oh well, like come on now. What town are we in right now? We're in Guelph, Ontario.
Yeah.
So of course I pick Scream. It's got to be Scream. Neve Campbell, John Frost CVI, born in Guelph, raised in Guelph. You gotta love her. Where's her statue? That's all I'm asking.
Actually, that's a good point. Where is her statue?
Or even just like a little, in John F. Ross, a little like plaque or something. Anyways, even if she wasn't from Guelph, I love Scream. It is a perfect mix of just a slasher. I don't usually love slashers, but it is just, it does it so perfectly. And it's one of the only films I can think of where there's only, you know, at the most 1 minute in between being ridiculously scared and then just laughing, laughing for minutes on end. And Matthew Lillard is, I don't want to spoil anything, but although it did come out in the 90s, Matthew Lillard is so perfect at being what he is in the film. And it's one of the only films where when I first watched it, I had no idea who the killer was going to be. And it was a genuine surprise. Also, Courtney Cox and David Arquette. Well, I don't know. I was going to say you got to love him. I don't know about David Arquette, but you got to love Courtney Cox. And it's just also got one of those fun Hollywood stories. It's where they met, all that jazz. So it's just a perfect mix.
They are divorced now.
It's gay. No, I know they are. I know. It's just a perfect mix of that. It's got some fun Hollywood stories from it. It's so comedic. It's got, you know, It's got that Neve Campbell girl. And yeah. Also, because it is a horror film, it scares you. At the very least, I got scared. A perfect slasher. It's not the kind you don't like ridiculously jump out of your chair, but it's a good slasher.
Yeah.
Yeah. Also, anyone listening, I think they're probably going to show it at the Bookshelf on Halloween or during October, as they did last year, so you should all go see it.
I think they're showing Prom Night this year.
Are they?
Okay. Yeah.
You see that if you want.
What a ringing endorsement for prom night. Okay, that's Peter's list.
Yeah. Did I say any of the same as Vince? Do we have
no,
any?
No, we're all different.
Okay, good. Nope.
I can recap Vince's list. I have it right here. So Vince's list was Wreck, or Record, Texas Chainsaw Massacre,
yeah.
Evil Dead 2, Halloween, and The Exorcist.
See, I was thinking about the Texas Chainsaw, so it's good I skipped out.
But don't skip it, because it's... Anyway. So we're going to have a list of hopefully 25 when we're done. We'll see what Tim picks next week when he's in. We're going to move on, though, to something a little less scary, or maybe more scary, because it's about,
always,
you know, putting yourself out there and singing your songs and your hit songs if you're Lady
Gaga.
Well, yeah,
going on stage is apparently the biggest fear, so.
That's true, actually.
Yeah.
But we're going to talk about A Star is Born, the new film, and to warm you up, we're going to play a little track from that movie. You're listening to End Credits here on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus, and Community Radio.
Too tired trying to fill that void, or do you need more? Ain't it hard keeping it so hardcore?
Is that me?
That's you.
You just write that now?
Yeah.
Pretty good.
And that was a clip from A Star is Born. It is the new film from Bradley Cooper, and it stars Bradley Cooper, Lady Gaga, Sam Elliott, Andrew Dice Clay, Rafi Gavron, Anthony Ramos, and Dave Chappelle.
Yeah.
I do like when Dave Chappelle, because it's like a point of view shot of Bradley Cooper's passed out on the ground, and Dave Chappelle comes in. It's almost like a mirage.
Yeah.
It's like, all of a sudden, Dave Chappelle appears.
Oh, yeah. Well, and he's been all over the place. He's been in some other films, too.
He's also been on the campaign trail.
Yeah. Well, and his stand-up on Netflix. He just literally like went to a cabin for like 10 years, and then all of a sudden he's all over the place again. But even though, like, when you do first look at him in the film, like you said, you're going to think Dave Chappelle, but his character's great, too. And you get into that.
He's playing somebody just looks miraculously like Dave Chappelle.
Yeah.
In a hat. In a pork pie hat.
And a wife beater, one of those white shirts. It matches the vibe.
Yeah. So we were talking during the music that this is a remake of a 1976 film that starred Barbra Streisand as the ingenue and Kris Kristofferson as the experienced singer. It was a remake of... That was a remake of a 1954 film that starred Judy Garland. And I can't remember who she was against in that one, but,
And the 1933 one, right? There's one in the '30s too.
Oh, was there?
Yeah. This is the fourth one.
Okay. So, I mean, so once in every generation, we come back to A Star is Born, I guess.
Yeah. Which is, why it's special. It's one of those films where it seems to be like every 20 years, like every, once there's a new generation that's become around 20 or so, they just put out a new one.
Mm-hmm. And I think we talked about this before, but, you know, Bradley Cooper himself seems especially inspired by some of these, some of the older things. He did Elephant Man on Broadway, which was, according to him, the thing that made him want to be an actor was seeing John Hurt in the Elephant Man, the old David Lynch film. And I guess, you know, maybe at some point along the way, he also watched A Star Is Born, and that became indelibly...
Oh, that wouldn't have surprised me.
...hooked into his psyche, because this has been a passion project for him.
Yeah.
I think that passion shows on the screen.
Oh, 100%, yeah. I thought it was... I thought he did a remarkable job.
Mm-hmm. What did you talk about? What you liked?
Yeah, about the film.
Yeah,
all around. Well, first things first. Well, I don't want to say all. There's small flaws everywhere, but overall, the music's the best part.
It
really is.
Yeah.
This is rare for me, but there were some parts where Lady Gaga was singing her first. It's in a drag bar, which is quite cool. That's something that I'm assuming is different from the previous ones.
That's a good guess.
Yeah, and Lady Gaga starts singing, and you're like, okay, that's great. And then she starts really singing, and I almost shed a tear. It was just...
Also, she's singing Edith Piaf in the original French.
Yeah, the French song, exactly. Yeah. And then Bradley Cooper's character is just watching her from behind in the bar with his old little southern cowboy beard. He's sipping on some, I'm not sure, but...
I think it's a gin and tonic.
Yeah. Gin and tonic.
he's going old school with the G&T.
Yeah, and you can tell, that's one of the early scenes, you can just tell something fun's going to happen. Mm-hmm. You're going to meet each other, and this is going to be just a remarkable view of what singers have to deal with and go through, and that's exactly what it was.
Mm-hmm.
But it also delved more deeply into their relationship than I thought it would. I thought it would be more so he's a manager, and it's all about her career. Main focus, though, was on their love and how her career affected it.
Mm-hmm.
They're just all so great at acting that you get into that. You're in their world.
Mm-hmm.
You're viewing it. And you're happy at sometimes, you're sad sometimes. It's just, and great shots too. The shots are just, you know, they're not like special or anything, but there's some that are quite good.
Well, the cinematography is really good.
I think especially for the stage performances, the cinematography is great. It's like Martin Scorsese when he directs, you know, Rolling Stones film.
That was the thing that stuck out to me, is that they shot the concert footage like it was a concert film.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure if Bradley Cooper is sort of naturally gifted in terms of the musical realm, but...
Yeah, do you know if during the film it was actually... Is it his voice?
It is his voice.
Yeah, okay. Very
but I'm impressive. Not sure if he had to like do like... 12 months of like vocal training or learning how to play guitar, but I did find that very believable.
Yeah.
That, you know, Bradley Cooper as a celebrity, as an actor, sort of disappeared. I'm tired of name dropping in this episode, mm-hmm. but I have interviewed Bradley Cooper before, and he's very charismatic person. But
I've heard that too.
So, but he managed, you know, does manage to sort of sink into this role, which is like sort of much more misanthropic. He's like been at this for a while. He's sort of being kept together with pills and booze and just
never any kind of full details to do his past. And they do that on purpose because they want you to use your imagination, and you want you to view him as, you know, some already existing celebrity that's similar.
Right. And the point is, it like how he got to this point doesn't matter. The fact is he is at this point. And he comes to see the Lady Gaga character, Allie, as a kind of salvation. Even though she doesn't really salvage him, he's like, in a way, like as she becomes more of a success, he becomes more of a mess.
Yeah.
And it's because, like, he's kind of, you know, the thing that occurred to me in watching the film is that she becomes like another drug to him.
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, he needs to have her around to sort of, you know, level him off, you know, the pills and the booze, you know, sort of, I guess, sort of take away the pain or whatever he's feeling. But it's said by Sam Elliott at one point that, you know, after they first performed together, that it's been a while since he's seen the Bradley Cooper character, Jackson, you know, go to that place where he was such a magnetic performer, that original place where as a musician that drove him to his initial success, that she brought something out of him. But that also becomes... Mm-hmm. a drain on him as she becomes more successful on her own. And, you know, it's not about her giving it to him and you know, the audience secondary. She develops her own audience, which makes him secondary.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like a sad journey in that regard.
It is a sad journey. It's a very sad journey. So enjoy the early parts of the relationship while you can. But unfortunately, I think realistic for a lot of celebrities, and just a very interesting way of showing why he's getting so upset. They don't fully answer it, but I think a lot of what you said is definitely true. I think he is one of the people who likes training. He likes being the one who kind of helps out. So once she becomes too kind of strong in her own right, he's lost, like you said. He doesn't know what to do. And also, I think part of the reason he does delve a bit deeper into drinking was his ear issue. They never fully go into detail about it, but he's having an ear issue the whole time.
It's tinnitus.
Is it tinnitus? Yeah. And it's something a lot of musicians have to deal with. I think most rock stars that did tours have pretty close to deaf ears.
I think when you're playing next to like huge speakers six nights a week, it's sort of inevitable that you're going to develop some hearing issues. Certainly Scotty, who I do open source in Squelfwick, he's been a musician for many years in his life, and he has, you know, trouble with his ears. If he goes to like a live music venue, he has the things he sticks in his ears. So,
but they never go into like full detail about it. Like, that's not a main part of the plot, and that's because, again, Lady Gaga is the main character, right?
Yeah.
She is the central character, and it's about how her becoming more and more central, I guess, negatively affects him, but it also brings him closer to her. Like, they get a place together, everything like that.
Yeah. It's definitely her movie.
Yeah.
And I think that's, again, it's sort of a tribute to Bradley Cooper's character, that he knows enough to get the hell out of the way.
Yes.
And she's
sometimes
but that drag bar scene you're talking about, you see his reaction to her, but the focus of the film is never off of her.
No.
In a different actor's hands or a different director's hands, the focus would have been on him and like his revelation of her her talent and her performance and her greatness. But while that's definitely a part of it, that scene, the focus on that scene is this tremendous talent coming out singing in French. And it sums up the title of the film, A Star is Born. She comes out, A Star is Born. And just like from the first moment Lady Gaga's in the film, where she's like breaking up with a boyfriend on the phone in like the bathroom.
Oh, I forgot about that. Yeah.
And she just leaves the bathroom stall, and she's like, she just screams like, why are men so a-holes or something. I can't remember exactly what she screams, but she screams it, and then she just like adjusts her uniform and goes back to work.
Yeah, she's totally fine.
And it's
whereas there isn't that many kind of solo scenes with Bradley Cooper. And if there is a solo scene with Bradley Cooper, it's usually him talking about Lady Gaga.
Yeah. But I think what's interesting is like she almost becomes like Lady Gaga is as much sort of like the performance and the makeup and the costumes and the act as it is about the music. Not to say she isn't a great musician. She is a great musician. But it was sort of interesting watching the film where Ally, the character in A Star is Born, sort of goes from Stephanie, who's the real-life Lady Gaga, to kind of becoming Lady Gaga.
the whole SNL scene, she's 100%. That's Lady Gaga right there. Well, because it gives little truthful glimpse like that into what a lot of singers have to deal with.
Yeah.
If you want to get that album on that billboard, you're going to have to switch it up. You're going to have some other producers help you out. You know, she was just a beautiful, wonderful, you know, piano herself, singing, but that's not enough. You know what I mean? That's not going to get number one on Apple Music or Spotify or anything.
Yeah. No, that's true. Part of it is that transformation. I just thought it was funny, kind of like the real life parallel. You know, becomes kind of like Lady Gaga. But
why they picked her. And that's why this is a perfect, like the other ones, A Star is Born. They're all show Hollywood, and Hollywood has changed. And I think that's why it's really great they do it every 20 years, because there's a lot of glimpses into this one of Hollywood things that have changed and that are completely different. including what the whole film is about, that Lady Gaga was able to become such a successful musician.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause there is,
and do it her way, because it's strongly implied that she's like trying to be pushed one way.
Yeah.
But she fights back a little. She's like having to navigate the system. How do I still like play the game, but mm-hmm. play it my way?
And it shows how much production matters now, or at least production is in the beats,
mm-hmm.
And how much the way the singer looks. Well, that's always mattered, obviously, Marilyn Monroe, but how much how it has to be almost like you're doing a stage performance now, like a huge play.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's just glimpses into the real Hollywood right now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It was too bad to not see any kind of SNL people cameo. I think that would have been fun.
We got an Alec Baldwin cameo, which is like the second Alec Baldwin cameo I've seen in 2 weeks, because yeah, he was at the beginning of the Black Klansman too.
Yeah, that was a bit too much. Is he? Oh, spoilers. Yeah. But yeah, that's honestly, it wouldn't surprise me. But he says one thing. He's not really.
Yeah, he throws it to her because he's the celebrity host
mm-hmm.
of SNL. But
what's really interesting about that scene too, and like honestly, every scene, you get to see what it's like when the cameras are off on mm-hmm. SNL, right? You get mm-hmm. to see what they have to tell Alec Baldwin or the singers beforehand. And as he usually is, Bradley Cooper's character behind the scenes watching her,
mm-hmm.
and you're seeing her perform through his point of view. And that's also, in my opinion, one of the best scenes with his brother.
Yeah, Sam Elliott plays his
Sam
brother.
Sam Elliott, yeah. Yeah. We've only really been talking about Bradley Cooper and Lady Gaga. I just want to say the other actors themselves, too, mm-hmm. were marvelous. I guess Dave Chappelle we talked about first. but no, Sam Elliott was great. And Andrew Dice Clay as the father did a remarkable job.
I love those, I guess they're like limo drivers,
I think,
or
they
something?
All work together. Yeah,
yeah. And but yeah, Andrew Dice Clay,
very likable father. I was surprised.
Yeah, who it's so funny because I remember, you know, in the 90s when like he was coming up, or I guess
have
late
Jack
80s
dealing up the hill
more or less. But I remember when he was like in The Adventures of Ford Fontaine, which was like this movie that was supposed to like launch his like movie career, and mm-hmm. people were like, Andrew Dice Clay is so inappropriate and this and that and the other thing. And it's like now he's like the love, you know, between this. And he was also in
Blue Jasmine,
where he was the brother-in-law, the working class brother-in-law mm-hmm. who, you know, hated Kate Blanchett. But
him, he is one of the main people in a season of Entourage, and him playing a very joking version of himself, like making fun of himself,
mm-hmm.
And showing that in real life he's not actually like ridiculously sexist, or, you know, he's a character. And I think him showing that in Entourage is what helped him be in Blue Jasmine and A Star Is Born, where he was great.
Yeah, I do like the...
Didn't recognize him at first.
No, neither did I. But I did like how he's like always telling the story about how he like... He sang, and how he, you know, sounded Sinatra, and then Sinatra comes out and everyone's like, you're not Sinatra.
It shows where Lady Gaga's character does get a bit of her musical taste, but it also shows and partially explains some questions you have about her. Like, why was she so scared at first?
Mm-hmm.
Why was she so scared at first to sing? And I think there is some, it shows the dad, since she was a kid, has been talking about how she's great at singing and kind of putting a bit of peer pressure into her.
Yeah, also kind of like, you know, putting her down a bit too.
Yeah.
Not like sort of in a mean way, but as like a, this is like a practical real world advice kind of way. Although I'm not sure in what...
Which is a lot of managers apparently told her.
I'm not sure in what world Lady Gaga is ugly.
Yeah, no, me neither.
Like, that's the kind of the most bizarre part of it when she says, you know... a lot of people say that that they love the way I sound, but they don't love the way I look. And it's like, what people?
Yeah. Although I think, unfortunately, in real life, Lady Gaga herself did have some issues like that. But that's...
Right. But I mean, that's like a matter of TV ugly, you know? It's, you know, the kind of mo... they said I was ugly. But no, it's... That's neither here nor there. That's
a little glimpse of how she is a lot like in the movie. She is a lot like the real Lady Gaga.
Yeah. But that's like, that's an old Hollywood thing. It's like the girl takes off her glasses and all of a sudden you realize she's beautiful.
Yeah.
that's one of the things that always ticks me off about the Arrow TV show, because one of the characters, Felicity, wears glasses. And then whenever they want to like show her like beautifying herself or like putting in an effort, they take her glasses off because it's, you know, glasses equal ugly. I don't know why. But to go back to Lady Gaga, I think this was a great showcase for her,
mm-hmm.
Not just for her singing talent, but for her, her acting talent as well.
Mm-hmm. And so her best scenes were her not sitting at all.
Right, and it's such a great performance. There's a scene where it's a Dave Chappelle scene where he goes and visits Dave Chappelle, and she, you know, he's gone on some kind of bender, and she comes and talks to him, and she's like, "This is the last time I'm coming to get you."
Yeah,
and it's not like judgmental. It's not, you know, anything like that. It's just like a firm matter of fact. You can, like, sense her disappointment. It's not like a rant or a rave or anything. She just says, mm-hmm. "This is the last time I'm coming for you." And it's chilling and heartbreaking kind of all in one go. And then they go back and have a very pleasant dinner.
She also has, I think, the scene where she is at the Grammys.
Mm-hmm.
She does a remarkable job. That's one of, in my opinion, her best scenes. And like, the SNL, very realistic looking.
Mm-hmm. Actually, I think I'm almost think the Grammys, the part of the Grammys, is a bit over the top. I have this thing where I think the first like 40-45 minutes of the movie just like kind of zoom. It's so tight. It's so well done. But after that, sort of like that when they first sing together on stage, and then sort of the aftermath of that, I think the film becomes sort of steadily more formulaic.
Yeah, I get that.
And I think not to say that the actors themselves weren't like giving 110%, but I think the story sort of falls into some easy tropes.
Yeah, it could just be the editing too.
It could be the editing.
It's small, but there is a couple shots that like I feel could have been like a second less.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like there's just some still shots, and it's like, okay, that's a cool shot, but let's get moving on. You know, the film could be 10 minutes less. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, it's 2 hours and almost 20 minutes long. Yeah.
Went by quickly though, but. It's, like you said, the second half went by a little slower.
Yeah. It's sort of as she becomes sort of more famous on her own, and he becomes more disappointed and drunker. That falls into like a lot of very typical traps of these types of movies. But I don't think that takes away from the film itself. It's still there were guys in the audience wiping away tears at the end.
Oh,
that final performance.
Me too. Yeah.
And you know, the lights come up and there were guys just like,
yep.
No, I wasn't crying. I wasn't crying.
Yep, I didn't, but I was so close. I was so close. Yeah. There was people in my row too that were tearing up.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. A lot of 50-year-olds, I feel like they probably have seen the original one. A Star is Born is a special film. Every generation gets it, and it's just a glimpse into what Hollywood's actually like.
Yes.
And it's just there. It's always starring like Barbara Streisand, Judy Garland, someone who themselves is amazing at singing. So it's just enjoyable for its music as well.
It's a very old fashionedy classic Hollywood style filmmaking, which is why I'm putting a marker in the ground right now. Lady Gaga's going to win an Oscar.
Win the Oscar for Best Actress. Statement. I hope so. I honestly do.
Yeah.
I do want to say though, you were mentioning the scene where she breaks up.
Mm-hmm.
That's like the first scene, and for a brief second, just that scene, I was a bit worried about what Lady Gaga's performance would be.
Mm-hmm.
It could have just been because of the bathroom echoes, or just because it was the first scene, maybe also the first one they shot.
Mm-hmm.
She wasn't doing a bad acting job, but she was doing more of a theatrical acting job.
Mm.
I thought it was too loud, and I thought she was doing too many physical visuals.
Mm. Mm.
But after that, no flaws whatsoever. Perfect.
I'll wrap up by saying I love the little alias cameos. That's where Bradley Cooper got his big break, his alias. Yeah. So he had Ron Rifkin as his sponsor and Greg Grunberg was his driver.
Yep.
That was pretty funny.
Yeah. Small little things like that spread out everywhere.
Yeah. So
I'd say see it.
I would also say see it.
Definitely
I think it's going to be unavoidable as we get into awards time.
Yeah. And this is just a theory. I think it might overpass Venom. I think it might actually do better.
In the long run?
Yeah, in the long run, box office wise.
Having also seen Venom, I would agree. And if you want to listen to us again, you can certainly find us on our website, endcreditsradioshow.com. You can go on social media on Facebook, End Credits Radio Show, or on Twitter, End Credits Radio. Peter, where can people find you on the internet?
Mr. Taurak, Twitter, and a YouTube.
And the YouTube.
Mm-hmm.
And I will be back here tomorrow at 5 p.m. for Open Source's Guelph, and that is with Scotty Hertz. And we were interviewing, starting our mayoral candidate interviews tomorrow, so we have two. So the next week and tomorrow will be our mayoral interviews, so stay tuned for that. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Adam A. Donaldson, or go to GuelphPolitico.ca. Stay tuned for more great programming here on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio, and End Credits. We'll be back here Wednesdays at 2 p.m. for more great episodes, and we will see you then.